The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And we'd like to welcome you to another edition of Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio, streaming live on the web at linewsradio.com. I'm your host, Bob Vecchio. Thanks for tuning in each and every week to find out about the amazing things that are going in our schools throughout Long Island and how they impact our local communities. And of course, we've spent a lot of time talking about how schools have reopened since the pandemic. We've talked with a lot of building administrators. We've also talked with some students about programs that are going on. But this week in our spotlight, it's a special policymaker edition. And we are pleased to be joined by our brand new senator from the 3rd Senatorial District. And she joins us for the first time on Spotlight Long Island Schools. And we'd like to welcome Senator Alexis Wyke. Senator Wyke, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be a part of it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you are a brand new state senator and you are up in Albany for the first go around this year. Before we get into any policy and budget discussions, and there's much to discuss because this is a budget year and kind of a legislative year like we've never seen before, let's find out a little bit about Senator Wyke. And first, tell us the 3rd Senatorial District, remind the folks in our listening audience the area that you cover, and then give us a little Reader's Digest version about who you are and how you came to be our new New York State Senator.
Well, that's quite a bit. So if you take your right hand and you make the letter C, that's about the shape of the district. So I cover the northern part of, I've got Brentwood, Central Islip, Hophog, and Ronkonkoma. And then on the southern portion below Montauk Highway, I have East Islip, Great River, Oakdale. It kind of merges in by that Sayville-Holbrook area and kind of goes in and out through the Bayport. And then it's a solid block from Brookhaven Town out to William Floyd, and not really north of Selden. It's below Selden and Yaphank. I have a little tiny piece of Yaphank. So that's kind of the area. It's about 45% of Islip and 55% of Brookhaven. So, you know, as the former receiver of taxes for Islip Town, I know my Islip side really well. And this year I was challenged with getting to know the Brookhaven side, which is the greater portion of the district. And I was welcomed with open arms and I felt like I was home. And I absolutely love the Brookhaven side of my district. And I'm having a great time representing that area. I got a good opportunity to meet so many people from both sides of my district, from the Islip and the Brookhaven. And it makes it easier to do the work up here. So a little about me, huh?
Yeah, a little bit about you.
I was born and raised in the 3rd District. So I was born right in Southside Hospital. I grew up in Ronkonkoma and Oakdale. I'm a Connecticut grad and, went to college at Farmingdale and Dowling College. And I served as an elected official as the receiver of taxes for Islip Town for 9 years, but I was in the office for 10. I am married for 25 plus years and I have 3 beautiful children. They're 23, 21, and 15. So I still have one of those kids going through this craziness in our school districts. And I have one who's still in college trying to do it all from college. And someone else who's my oldest is an NYPD officer. So he's going through the challenges of 2020 as a police officer. So it's been,
that's not an easy task for anybody in uniform these days, no matter where you serve. And thank you for your shared sacrifice as a mom of a police officer. It's never an easy job, that's for sure.
No, it's nerve-wracking. So between the stress of in-home learning at high school level, the stress of paying for college and having that whole virtual back and forth, and then, of course, having one who's an employed police officer, I think I'm maxed.
You definitely have a full plate. Let me ask you this. What made you, because listen, politics, no matter what level, local level, higher level, and Islip is similar to Brookhaven. It's a rough and tumble world, the world of politics. And you mentioned you worked in the receiver of tax offices for a year before you threw your hat in the ring and decided to enter.
9 years.
Nine years, before you entered into the political arena. What made you want to make that leap? Because while it could be extremely gratifying, it is extremely, well, forgive the pun, taxing, right? You have to have a pretty, you have to have a pretty thick skin to enter the world of politics, and especially nowadays with social media and the divisiveness, it's really sometimes a very tough spot. So what made you want to get involved?
I actually got involved in the world of politics when I was about 22. So I've been in there a long time. And, you know, I've always jumped in just from the heart. So whatever I did, I do from the heart. And there was so much going on in our state. So as receiver of taxes, I'm watching our taxes go higher and higher. And our school taxes are, you know, the biggest burden on most of us. And they're the biggest driving force of keeping us out of our state. They're making a lot of our seniors leave the state. And I got tired of saying, well, that's, you know, state politics for you. And then once they started, once they passed bail reform and then continued on with other legislation, of course, I heard about it before it happened because the bill passed in 2019 and then became enacted in January 1, 2020. So somewhere around Thanksgiving of 2019, I jumped in and said, enough is enough. I can't take anymore. I had just run for re-election as receiver of taxes. So I just renewed my 4-year commitment to the town. And I take that seriously. And so I felt bad leaving that commitment. I was just reelected to another term, but this seemed like it was a bigger calling and there was a bigger demand for someone to jump in who likes to get involved and who likes to roll up their sleeves and fight the good fight and who doesn't shy away from that. And anyone who knows me knows I'm not afraid of a fight. I don't go looking for a fight, but I certainly never shy away from a fight. And that's what we're in for this year. We're really going to have to fight hard to make sure that we get what we deserve on Long Island in a good way. We need our go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nope, that's okay. Because what I was going to say is you're absolutely right. And the fight is real. The fight is going to be difficult because this is not party politics on this show, but it is very geopolitical when you talk about Long Island as a region versus a city-centric agenda with New York City and other urban areas throughout the state. Aside, and we're going to get into the whole school policy issue and the budget issue, what would you say, aside from all that, are your biggest driving forces or your priorities as a legislator from statewide issues that impact Long Island and Suffolk County in particular?
We've got a few issues. And one of the biggest ones, of course, is law enforcement. When bail reform was passed, we saw it negatively impact our community drastically. There were at least a dozen anti-police policies that were passed last year. And as a result, we saw crime increase. We saw arrests decrease because, of course, the police were the tools that they operate with were taken away from them. Anyone who's gone into New York City can see that's a different place than what it used to be. And that's not because of COVID. That was because of the fact that bail reform passed. And now we have other issues that were already in existence that are exacerbated because of the situation we have, for example, homelessness. And that's a really big issue that we already needed to address. And now we have no choice but to address it. It's truly an enormous issue. And so there's so many things out there. And now we're seeing mandates being passed down, policy changes that affect our everyday life that are going to cost us a fortune, and it makes it harder to do business, and it's going to make it harder for people to stay in business. And that's not because of COVID. It's because of new laws that are being passed. And, you know, some of them have good intentions. We were just in session today and they were passing a whole bundle of bills that although the intention is fantastic, it's supposed to decrease discrimination in real estate. However, the bills that were passed are now going to make it very, very difficult for people to be good, hardworking, honest real estate agents. And that's a shame. We need to make sure that we have good qualified individuals who are in different areas of business. We need to make it easier for business to happen, not harder for business to happen. And some of the bills, you know, I was really torn on some of them today, but some of them do have a bigger purpose. And for example, you know, there's one that's out there that now requires that real estate agents are going to have to sign off, physically sign their name, even though they have ID cards. because, and you know what, I just, as receiver of taxes, I heard it all the time, people who were posing as real estate agents, and this will hopefully deter people from posing as real estate agents, especially as we see our real estate market climb out here as people leave the city.
Well, there are a host of issues that are going on up in Albany that have a direct impact on our lives here in Suffolk County. And we are speaking with the brand new New York State Senator from the 3rd Senatorial District. And she's giving us her views, her priorities. But we're going to turn our conversation after the break to the budget, school policy issues, supermajorities up in Albany with the Democrats. How does somebody in the minority party have an impact and an effect so that it has a positive impact on our schools, which has a direct impact on our communities? You're listening to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio. Catch us out on the web at linewsradio.com. Check out our Facebook page, Spotlight on Long Island Schools. That's your place to go suggest a program, club, or activity that your kids are involved in, and your school district may be the next one in our spotlight. We'll be right back after this. And we'd like to welcome you back to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio. Once again, I'm your host, Bob Vecchio, continuing our conversation with New York State Senator Alexis Wyke. And before the break, we were talking about general issues that are going on up in Albany. So, Senator, I want to start off with this. How does somebody who, as a registered Republican, you are in the minority caucus, and now we know that the state Senate, for the first time since the late 1800s, I believe, has a supermajority that is now veto-proof from the governor, which hasn't happened in a very long time because it used to be in Republican hands for so long. How does somebody in a minority party make a difference and get some of your priorities across the table and work that way?
Well, you know, Long Island is a unique area where not everything is going to be party related. And so, for example, our school budget is one of those issues where we're going to have to work as a team to represent Long Island. So no matter what side of the aisle you sit on, what party you belong to, we all need to be fighting for Long Island right now. So that's something that we can all basically agree on. We all agree on education and our teachers and our budgets and the amount of state aid that comes to our school districts. So it's kind of a no-brainer at this point. When it comes to school districts, it's not going to be party politics. It's going to be Long Island versus the rest of New York State. So I don't think we're going to have a problem teaming up and really fighting hard for our schools.
So let's get right into it. Let's talk about the current budget proposal from our governor. He actually did something I haven't seen in my 18 years on the school board. He actually is talking about two budgets, both heavily reliant on federal dollars supplanting New York State school aid as opposed to supplementing. But when we talk about Long Island versus the rest of the state, it's interesting. Statewide, there was about a 7% average, and I'll put it in quotes, increase, because it's not really an increase when we're utilizing federal dollars, but it is technically an increase. 7% statewide average, but for Long Island, it was like 1.3%. And there was an article recently in Newsday that talked about 50 schools on Long Island that would actually receive a reduction. And New York City, of course, received a double-digit increase. I believe it was somewhere near 13%. So why don't you start off with telling our listening audience about some of the issues that you perceive in the budget based on what you have seen and heard so far?
Oh, gosh, where to start? So, first of all, even though the city seems to be getting the lion's share of the funding, at least proposed in the budget as it presently is being proposed, we were on an education hearing. There were several of them last week. And even the city was crying, saying that they're not getting enough money, which, of course, made all of Long Island balk at the same time. And so it's interesting. So we've got lots of our aid being lumped into, you know, our local aid, which is transportation and so on, being lumped into something called service aid. It's being cut and it's being tapped. So that, of course, is going to hurt all of our school districts. So that's one of the big issues we're going to be fighting about. When we talk about federal aid, you know, we look at our budget and we should be you know, somewhere, you know, I can't give you a visual. We should be somewhere at, like, let's say the normal mark, and the federal funds this year, the proposed budget is going to cut us. And those federal funds are going to then bring us up to where we were, let's say, last year. Now, moving forward, we're not going to be expecting those federal funds, but we're still going to be where the governor has placed us this year, which means we're going to see this huge drop off. And we've heard a lot of school districts refer to it as falling off a cliff. And we are going to see that moving forward, which is going to be a problem. So in response to that, even if we increase our state aid, we're still going to be hurt because there's no way state aid is going to make up for that federal aid that we're going to get this year. So the big conversation has been, how are we going to realistically move forward over the next couple of years so that we can make it and make sure that we're not going to see things like service aid, that we're not going to see the governor placing those federal funds as if they were something we can expect moving forward, because that creates a big, it's a budget problem. School districts need some kind of predictability when they're making their budget so that they can accurately present something that can be voted on by the public and passed and be reliable. And right now we're not at that place. So the next month is going to be a rocky road of a lot of legislators trying to introduce legislation that's going to do things like allow more flexibility in the reserve funds so that school districts have the ability to use those reserve funds. Remember, reserve funds are rainy day funds, and boy, it's raining like hell out there. So we need to be able to use those reserve funds, and we need some of those restrictions lifted. So I'm sure we're going to see legislation that's going to offer a little bit of relief about that. I know that there has been discussion from school districts about offering, asking for relief from, there's a mandate 154. I know that the NYSET does not want to see anything happen with 154. So that's going to be a conversation that has to happen between NYSET and the school districts. We're going to have to come up with some good solutions. So there's a lot of conversation that still has to happen, which is good because we still have a month before we really get into voting on budget issues. But there's a lot going on that's going to drastically affect our school districts. And I know we all want to see the quality school that we have now maintained. And so it's going to be a fight, and we're all going to have to get behind it and fight together.
You know, and you touched on a whole bunch of things there. And again, folks need to understand there is a lot of moving parts to this budget that could negatively impact not only your school district, but your property taxes as well. When we talk about a funding cliff, to let you know how serious it is, the governor's proposal is backfilling $189 million in what used to be state aid, which is now being covered by federal dollars. So he's backfilling it into the budget this year. But if that $189 million is not made up next year, that is what the funding cliff for Suffolk County would be. I think it's like $144 million for Nassau County. So when you combine Nassau and Suffolk County, they have 25% of the overall backfilling funding risk that the state is utilizing, which is about $1.3 billion. By comparison, Nassau and Suffolk County have 25% of the risk that money could be gone next year and school districts would have to absorb that decrease, where New York City only has about a 12 to 13% risk. And that's where the shares is inherently unfair. And that's why our members of our communities need to be paying real close attention to what the potential funding cliff, not for 21-22, but 22-23 is what we're really looking at. We're looking at a 2 to 3 year budget process with Albany. And you touched on part 154, which is an unfunded mandate. And again, these are things that when the state passes a law, they sometimes pass along the cost, whether it be state education department or the legislature, they pass along the cost to the school districts, and the local communities pick up that cost. At William Floyd, where I'm the president of, part 154 costs us about $2.5 million a year locally. So we do need mandate relief. One of the other things that we talk about often when we're talking about the budget also is the change in demographics on Long Island. And you and I attended a session for the Longwood Legislative Breakfast recently, and there were some really sobering statistics that were presented by Eastern Suffolk Postes. Talk about the changing demographics that you have seen both serving as Islip Town tax receiver and what you've learned since becoming senator.
Yeah, I mean, some of that information that was presented was, it was sobering information. It was explaining that the wealth of the districts has dropped considerably, which most of us don't really notice on a day-to-day basis, but the school districts notice it more than the residents would notice it overall. So that means there's a higher demand for meals in schools. There's a higher demand for equipment for students because it's not necessarily provided to all of the students. There were other statistics that addressed mental health. COVID has created this isolation and this start-stop of education. And it's really taking its toll, not just on the students, but on the parents as well. And these are things that need to be addressed within the school district. And I applaud our school districts. I said this the other day, you know, as a parent, I didn't really notice how much COVID and virtual learning was truly impacting. Of course, you see the basic impacts, but how much it was truly impacting my student and students in general. And I'm very proud of our school districts that they really recognize the amount of impact of the mental health issues that are going on at every level. You know, there's really obvious ones, you know, as being closed up in COVID, we saw, unfortunately, we saw a lot of domestic abuse and so on happening. Those are a little more obvious, not necessarily, but it's a little more obvious than the smaller things where students are really beating up their own self-esteem, thinking that just because something is virtual or just because it's being submitted electronically, that they're beating themselves up trying to make something perfect before they submit it. And it's really taking its toll on the student's self-esteem. So that's a lesser thing that's happening to our students. But still, we see this wide range of mental health issues that are coming up that have maybe never really been there before. So we saw lots of different areas that are drastically being changed on Long Island. We saw a big influx of people moving into the area, which were changing some of the statistics as well. So,
well, we're going to have to stop there. We're going to continue our conversation with Senator Alexis White next week because there's much more to discuss about the social and emotional and virtual versus in person. Tune in again next week. You're listening to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio, streaming live on the web at linewsradio.com. And again, next week, a special policymaker edition right here on Spotlight on Long Island Schools.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.